All right, so I guess we're live, Doc. I guess we're rolling, my friend.
Hey, finally.
Yeah, you know, without further ado, I guess we can start the first podcast here for CVASPS.com. The first podcast of many, a Friday with the Docs, with Dr. Michael Yeses. Doc, thanks for being on.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, Doc, I guess we can kind of cut right to the chase. One of the big reasons that we wanted to have you involved was obviously because of your influence and training methodology and bringing over many ideas from Eastern Europe and the former USSR. But I want to kind of focus today on one of the main things that you and when Danny was at dinner with us that first night that we talked about, and that's specialized exercises, because I think that that's something that really, you know, lack of a better term, has been kind of bastardized here in the Western world, you know, with the whole, you know, functional trend, may we call it. Although some people do very, very good things when they talk about functional, whether it be in the therapy side or with, you know, corrective exercise and helping people get better physically and improving from ailments, it could be said that functional exercise is kind of the mistake made off of what people should have been doing with specialized exercises. So I guess where we need to start is, what was the foundation behind them? And meaning from that is, it's, where did this idea come from? You know, when, how did this idea come to Dr. Michael Yeses?
Okay, it goes back a little ways, really back to the 80s. See, now, in the Soviet Union at that time, their method of training was based on volume. Every year, if you go back to the 50s, every year was more volume, more volume, more volume. They thought this was the answer to being a better athlete. Then they found out, they got to the point where the athletes couldn't train any longer. They just couldn't handle the loads. But they said, there's got to be a better way. And that's when they hit upon the concept of specialized exercises. And they hit on this idea mainly by looking and examining exactly what the athlete does in his training. Like, for example, plyometrics. This was one of the methods developed by Vereshchansky. He studied runners and jumpers, found out a tremendous amount of force is exerted on a landing, and the force is given back very quickly in the takeoff, executed in less than 1/10 of a second. Today, your elite runners are executing the touchdown in less than 0.8 seconds. So it's even faster today. But anyway, at that time, that's what it was. So they said to themselves, how can we duplicate this landing and takeoff in an exercise so that we can enhance this ability to land and take off very quickly, which is the secret to running and jumping? So by looking at this, they came up with what they call specialized exercises. It's specific to the act of taking off in running and in jumping. They didn't do this just in running. They did it in many sports. They took a look at, what are the key elements? How can we duplicate these key elements to train the athlete in these key elements, which have a direct transfer to their ability to perform on the field or on the court? That was the key. It wasn't just doing the exercise, but by doing this exercise, you became a better performer. It was a direct line. So instead of going for more volume, now they said, let's do the specialized exercises. And then they flip-flopped their training. Before this, about 80% was devoted to volume, 20% devoted to the sport. Now it became 80% devoted to the sport or sport-specific exercises, and only 20% to volume. So it was a dramatic change. And this is what they attributed their success to in their future years from the 80s on up. There's no telling what it could have been today if the country didn't break up. Because once the country broke up, the whole sports system, for the most part, broke up, especially on the elite level.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty neat stuff.
Say one other thing here. You started off the functionality, or the people dealing with functionality. If it was true functional training, they would really be doing specialized exercises. But they don't really do true functional training. That's where they fall down. They call it functional, but it's only a general functional.
Yeah.
It's not specific.
Yeah.
Whereas specific exercises are very specific to a joint action.
Yes. And I actually think that a lot of the people that are the, I guess we can use the word gurus in that situation, talking about the functional aspect, would actually say that their functional exercises are actually directed towards the general aspects of movement. Which, don't get me wrong, it's important for everybody, you know, to be able to do general, basic, day in and day out movements that are going to allow you to kind of progress upon, one could say. But I couldn't agree with you more that the difference between functional, where we could look at just general function of the body, and specific or specialized, meaning this is doing something directly in part of, I guess we could say, a sporting movement, or, I mean, as you know, what we're going to get to, you know, a part of the technique or the whole technique, is kind of where there's the fork in the road. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they're more one way, and specialized is obviously more the other. And I think that leads me right into the next question, Doc, is talking about this, what defines a specialized exercise? I mean, let's just go over what you would define it as. And what exactly makes a specialized exercise a specialized exercise? And since you've already touched upon it, maybe we can go a little more in depth into the benefits of it.
Okay, very good. Okay, the main thing right now is that we want to think of this specialized exercise as just what the term says. It's very special and specific. Rather than using specialized, sometimes I'll say specific exercise. It's very specific to one action or two or three actions. But it's not a general thing. It's very, very specific and defined. And most importantly, it has specific criterion. In relation to the specialized exercise, has five criterion. The most important one is that the action duplicate the neuromuscular pathway seen in execution of the skill during gameplay. That's the most important one. So in other words, it has to be neurologically, neuromuscularly identical, or as close to being identical as possible. Number two, strength must be developed in the same range of motion as it is exhibited in gameplay. Like, for example, I think you asked me about the knee drive that we had a discussion on last year. Well, in knee drive, we're developing strength of the hip flexors, beginning with the leg behind the body, as occurs in running, then driving it forward. And when it gets under the body and moves forward, it's all on inertia. We don't want strength when the thigh is moving upward. We want strength from when the thigh is behind the body to underneath the body. See, now we're developing strength exactly where it's used in the running stride or when taking a quick step forward or anything along these lines.
Right.
It's the same idea, that quickness.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the second criterion. Third criterion is that it uses the same type of muscular contraction as seen in the competitive event. So in relation to this knee drive, when we take that quick first step, or when we're running and sprinting, it has to be a very fast, explosive movement. So we have to develop the muscles in an explosive manner. Now, this doesn't mean we can't do strength or we can't do the exercise slower. We have to develop the strength first. And then we build up to the point where now we can do the exercise explosively. That's the key. Now, there are other criterion I don't typically use them. I say, if you can fulfill these three, you've got it. The other would be the amplitude of movement, you know, whether it's going high or low, and the direction. So I think this sometimes is self-explanatory. You got to drive the thigh forward, not upward. So if we take a look at where it's being used, it kind of overlaps a little bit. So that's why I use these three. But these are the criterion. Now, if you're going to talk about a specialized exercise, it has to fulfill one or more of these criterion. Ideally, all of them at the same time. Sometimes we do one, and that still works. Then we bring in a second one, a third one, and eventually we get them all. Okay, so that's what differentiates it from a general exercise or other what people call specific exercises. Most of these people, specific means using the same muscles as are involved in the sport. It is very general. So this is what we do in general training. This is GPP.
Mm-hmm.
Once we get into the specialized training, then we have to be very specific as to the criterion used.
Right. Right. You know, and I think, Doc, that the best point that you brought up, and, you know, a lot of that should really be familiar to most people, you know, that the amplitude of movement needs to be proper, the rate of force developed or the speed of contraction needs to be proper. But the idea of building upon it, and I think that that's something, you know, as you kind of saw with when we sat down in April and we went over some of the stuff that my kids were doing, I think that that's something that people kind of missed the boat on. And they see that it's like there's these exercises that we're talking about, you know, the pullback and the knee drive and the lunge are the three that, you know, I utilize the most, but both the front and the side lunge when it comes to the specialized work with the core. And people want to go right to that snap, 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 real fast action, but they don't understand that there still needs to be that general preparatory phase to build this as well. And I think that the one thing that's really important, not just with the general strength development, is actually learning the movement and improving the technique in a slower manner, you know, like how we've talked about the cutting action in the past, so that the kids understand and they get to feel where that point actually is that they're reaching to, you know, in the knee drive when they reach way back with their foot, and what it's like to keep that parallel tibia, you know, to the ground and to punch their knee forward. And you bringing that up, you know, it's funny. We're reviewing Burke Ashansky's special strength training, the practice manual for coaches. Our staff is right now. And I want to say it's chapter 2. He talks specifically about that he puts a stick figure in the position of the knee drive with the foot way back, and he says that this is the way that you need to train the hip flexor going this way. And he has another person with a plate on their knee doing just a straight knee lift. It's like, this is not a specialized exercise. This is not what we're after. But I think that those are, I mean, you know, and his list is longer. I want to say that his list is 5 or 6 different criteria, although one or two may be similar to each other in the wording. But I think that, like, when you look at it, those three are actually the perfect way to look at it. Is it the same range of motion? Is it just as fast? It really, to me, are the two big ones. Can you do it in the same range of motion, and can it be just as fast? And the other thing that I think people miss the boat on is that it can be part of a technique or part of the skill.
Right.
And I think they look at that and they say, well, if you just get your knee drive better, you know, the driving forward action of the knee and running, and all you do is work punch, 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 you're not helping to develop force into the ground. Well, that's where the pullback comes in. It's antagonist, you know, idea that you have to train both aspects of the movement. And I think that that's really awesome. But since we have been talking about those two, and I kind of went on a little rant about them, let's talk about the pullback and the knee drive, because really, outside of probably, you know, swimming and skating sports, those are the two that are probably with the lunge the most important in any land game, you know, when it comes to running, because everybody's got to run. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, you know, except for maybe golf. But let's talk a little bit about those and why those two are important, and just a few, if we can give just some ideas of what it exactly entails.
Okay, that's a very good question, Jay. And it has a really simple but complex answer. The most important is that, and this is where I think you're correct in stating that most people overlook the concept that you can develop a small part of the total technique and then incorporate it into the total technique. And this is what we do with the knee drive. There's only one aspect of total running. The pull back is another one. Ankle extension is a third one. To me, those are the big three. But all of these are important. But we can enhance each one of these and then incorporate them into the total skill. See, too many people say that, well, if it's going to be specific, you have to do the whole sport. Well, sure, but then you're not going to get better by doing the whole sport all the time. This has typically been the modus operandi, if I can use that term loosely, of developing an athlete in the United States. You got to play the game. This is why we have kids 7, 8, 9, 10 years old playing the game. They want to be the best in the game by the time they're 12, instead of developing their individual physical abilities. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. Back to your question. So we can do these specific parts. And why do we zero in on the knee drive and the pullback? Well, there are a couple of very good reasons for this. The knee drive and the pullback, they use up 80% of a runner's energy. In other words, moving the thigh forward and moving the thigh backward is the bulk of your running. This is what's going to fatigue you. That's because it uses so much energy. Forget about that generation of force. That's everybody's gone nuts with the work done by Wei and how you got to keep creating more and more force, which you do. It's very important. But anyway, I won't get into that now, how they misinterpret that. But the knee drive, that's a very important component to quickly get the leg out in front. But see, since I mentioned Wayne, I have to go back to him now, because everybody kind of ignores technique. See, according to his study, all you need is that force when your foot hits on the ground. You got to generate maximum force on contact. Nobody looks at how you do this. So knowing that you got to generate maximum force, or the elite runner generates the most force. Bolt generates over 1,000 pounds of force on contact. Great. What happens to the force? Nobody can tell you that. It's not given back vertically. It's not given back as 1,000 pounds of force. But nobody studies this. But they all go nuts trying to figure out, how am I going to get vertical? How am I going to generate 1,000 pounds of force going upward? Because you had 1,000 pounds of force going down, so you got to now got to have 1,000 pounds of force going upward. So that's kind of silly. But the forward movement and backward movement, this has been substantiated by a Russian study. I can give you the sources on it. I don't remember the guy's name right now. And by a recent American study. It was reported in Research Today about a month ago already. And it brought out, they were doing a study to try and find out which joint actions require the most energy for amputees. How can they work on getting the prosthetics to help them? They found out that it was the thigh moving forward and backward. 80%, and the other 20% came from the ankle joint extension. These were the three energy users. So to develop, and then once again, too, on the knee drive. Why do you need it? Because my analysis of runners, when they start slowing down and changing technique, especially near the end of a race, it's because they can't keep driving the knee forward. You take a look at how high the thigh goes, and you see it's getting lower and lower. That's why they slow down. So if you want to improve them by doing that one exercise, you're going to develop a better runner for the distance. He'll be able to maintain his technique for a longer period of time. I bet if you look at most of your players, you'll see near the tail end of a game, they're hardly bringing that thigh up. See?
Well, hopefully not anymore. We've been doing them for about 2 years now.
You got it. See, that's the beauty of that exercise.
Yeah.
See? And the same thing with the pull back. That's the key to generating that force when your foot hits the ground. So the more force you can generate, the more you can load the muscles, in this case, the ankle joint. The more it gets loaded, the more it can give back on a push-off to drive the body forward when the body is way out in front of the body or in front of the toe-off, of the foot at toe-off. See, so that amount of force, even though it's only 20%, is still a tremendous amount. And that's what drives the runner forward, horizontally, not vertically. Although there's a small vertical component, but don't forget, a world-class sprinter, his center of gravity or center of mass only goes up about 1 inch or so.
Yeah.
So I hope I answered the question. It took me a roundabout way, but...
No, yeah, completely. You know, it's understanding that the preparation needs to be for where the energy is used the most. And, you know, that goes back to, again, to what we've been revealing now, you know, with special strength training, where he talks about the bioenergetics of the movement have to be the same as well. And you need to prepare the body to... It doesn't matter if I put a Corvette engine in, you know, a Nissan Sentra, if I don't put any gas in the Sentra. You know, it's still not going to go anywhere. So understanding that you're fixing the technique, you're becoming more efficient, and you're improving. If you're handling the proper volumes and intensities, you're improving the bioenergetics of at least that portion of the movement, and then the second portion of the movement being the paw back, you've now made yourself more efficient, stronger, faster, more explosive at what really turns out to be 80% of the running action.
That's right.
I mean, if you think of it that way, it's really mind-blowing stuff, you know, and it really is. It's really simple, too. I mean, it's not like, you know, we've talked about it. It's not like we spend 40 minutes of our hour doing it with my guys. I mean, we spend 5-8 minutes, 3 to 5 times a week, depending on the time of the year, working on some of these things, you know, splitting them out throughout the week, you know, depending on how the guys feel. And it really has been a great help, in my opinion, and you know, and in the guys' opinion about how we're moving and how we're performing. So it's something that I think really has been overlooked, and that people need to get a better grasp of, you know, in the future to really understand how to get these kids better, because that's what we're here for. I mean, in the long run, it's just to make these kids better players. So
that's the bottom line.
Yes, sir.
One thing along those lines, Jay, even to make these exercises easier, like we're talking about the knee drive and the paw back, this is why I developed the active cords, as I think I mentioned to you a while back. You take a look at the exercise by Vereshchansky in his book. See, now, I was familiar with those exercises. I saw them all when I was in the Soviet Union, when I was with him for over a week. And to do those exercises, I tried duplicating when I came back to the States. And they are cumbersome. We tried putting a weight boot on the foot and standing up on some piece of equipment and trying to drive the thigh up. It was just impossible. So this is why I developed, you know, the active cords, so we can duplicate this action. And many times we do these exercises on the field. We can do it right on a track. Hook it up to a fence and we're ready to go. Or I don't know how you could do it in the gym. Sometimes we hook it up to the bleachers and on the side, but you probably have other ways too. Or
mm-hmm.
You can even use these exercises, and we haven't gotten to this yet, where you can, before the game starts, or let's say if a guy's been sitting warming a bench for a long time, you can get up and do some of these exercises real quick and then run out on a court, and boy, he's ready to go. It activates the muscles exactly the way they're going to be used. So it's the best warm-up in the world. And sometimes
oh, yeah.
They're even quicker.
Yeah, and you know, and things that people talk about is, you know, opening up your hips and activating different muscles like you were talking about. You know, we do it right before we squat. And when we don't, like, our guys, they don't squat as well because they're, you know, their hamstrings aren't firing as well and their glutes aren't firing as well because they haven't been through the progression that we go through. Their hip flexors haven't opened up, so they're getting bound up on the way down. So it really, you know, I mean, it's to say that they're foolproof would be over-dramatizing it, but it really is. I mean, it's as soon as you get an eye of where they're supposed to be and you're not really afraid to just put your hands on a kid's hips and put them here and pull their foot back until they give you, I mean, you know the look that I'm talking about where it's like, oh, yep, that's the spot. And then they learn it. I mean, it's
right.
Yeah, it's foolproof. It's been great with us. And it, yeah, and, you know, and with the cords, it's not the increments of increase of tension are so minimal that it allows you to consistently make the small progressions so that you can, even if you train at the same resistance a few times, six times, eight times, whatever it may be, you can make a little jump so that you have that kind of elongated, you know, the training stays with you longer so that it's more embedded. I mean, these kids are so plastic at 18 to 21 anyway, but the training in itself allows you just general tweak, general small tweak, small tweak, you know, and it's, and but they do go heavy. I mean, and there's, we went through a little phase this summer where it was, I wanted them to go as heavy as they could and really work on snapping down as forcefully as they could and driving through as forcefully as they could with as heavy of a band resistance as they could handle and still do it right. And they really are awesome, man. And it's really a, it's not when you look at a lot of the cables and the tuning things and you're like, this is kind of foo-foo-y type of equipment. I mean, it definitely, there's a definite place for it in the training of athletes and their, you know, in their preparation. And it's something that's really helped, I mean, all the teams that we work with and everybody here, it's implemented, I mean, with the exception of the teams in the water. And I don't think the golfers do it, but again, they don't run. Have been using the active cords to implement the clawback and the knee drive and the stretches to get ready for the lunges and then getting into the lunging exercises. It's really fascinating stuff, and it's really, it is. It's simple, it makes sense, and it's very easy to implement.
Yeah, and then, golfers, by the way, use the cords for more rotation.
Right. Just I'm talking about the clawback and the knee drive. I mean, it's not specifically. I mean, those two are obviously exercises that are going to benefit them as well.
Yeah, see, the point I wanted to bring out, we have become locked in, more or less, on using barbells and dumbbells, which are great. I'm not taking anything away from them. But I developed the cords to do actions that you cannot do with barbells and dumbbells. See, this is the beauty of them. And most of our sport-specific exercises do not use barbells and dumbbells. We can use them on some, like the lunge you could do with barbell and so on. But when you use the cords, it's completely different because now you can concentrate on driving the hips. Whereas with a barbell on your shoulder, you can't think in terms of accentuating the hips.
No.
And you're just thinking in terms of stepping out. So the emphasis and the mindset changes, you know, depending upon the equipment that you use.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Well, Doc, I think that this was absolutely awesome stuff. I'm really excited, and I'm sure that the folks that swing by the page are really gonna find this information.
Let me.
Fascinating, and it's. I hope that they're excited to check out some more about it, and you know, explosive running, explosive basketball, building an efficient athlete all have information about this in there. I talked about it in Pennsylvania, and that presentation will be up on the site soon. I think that, you know, this is something that we'll definitely touch base about again here in a couple of weeks. because I think that there's a lot we can talk about with this. You know, even almost return to play ideas and things like that. I think that this is an area of preparation for athletes that I think that really combine a lot of different facets of the overall picture that people are kind of overlooking, and it's really helped us a lot, and I really hope we can help other people with it.
Yeah, I hope so, and I agree wholeheartedly with you, Jay.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Doc, and we'll talk soon, my friend.
Okay, same here, and thank you, Jay.
Thanks.
Great.